across the dooryard. Do what you can to help us. Dmitri finished giving orders, and the men immediately split. Olga was surrounded by a shrunken ring, pushing back toward the door of the palace. The rest made a wedge and drove forward, shouting, toward the bear and Constantine, through the packed mass of dead. Vasya ran with them, and a dozen upiri bloomed into flame on either side. Morozko's swift hand caught the dead by wrist and throat, banishing them. There were so many. Their progress slowed, but still they came nearer the bear, nearer. Now the men were faltering. In their faces was sick fright. Even Dmitri looked suddenly afraid. The bear was doing it. He grinned. As the men wavered, the upiri drove forward with renewed strength. One of Dmitri's men fell, his throat torn away, and then another. A third shrieked with horror as sharp teeth sank into his wrist. Vasya set her jaw. The fear buffeted her too, but it wasn't real. She knew that. It was the bear's trick. She loosed the fire from her soul again, and this time it flared from the bear's streaming coat. Miedved turned his head, snapping, and the fire instantly died. But she had used his moment of inattention. While Morozko kept the dead things off her, she threw herself across the last few steps, unwound the golden rope from her wrist, and flung it over his head. The bear dodged, somehow. He dodged the lynx as they flew. Laughing, he lunged, jaws open, to snatch at Morozko. Though the frost demon ducked, Vasya didn't have time for another try, for the movement had pulled Morozko from the side, and the dead things had closed round her. "Vasya!" Morozko shouted. A slimy hand caught at her hair. She didn't bother to look before she set the creature afire. It fell back, howling. But there were so many. Dmitri's wedge had splintered. Men were fighting individual battles all over the dooryard. The bear was keeping Morozko from her, and the dead were closing in once more. A new voice sounded from the direction of the gate. Not a chert or a dead thing. It was her brother standing there, sword in hand. Beside him stood his master, Sergei Radonezhsky. They both looked disheveled, as though they'd had a hard ride through dangerous streets. The rain ran down Sasha's drawn sword. Sergei lifted his hand and made the sign of the cross. "In the name of the Father," he said. Astonishingly, the dead things froze. Even the bear stilled at the sound of that voice. Somewhere in the dark, a bell began to ring. A touch of fear showed even in the Winter King's eyes. The lightning flashed again, illuminating Constantine's face, which had gone slack with horrified wonder. Vasya thought. He believed there was nothing more in this world than devils and his own will. Sergei's praying was quiet, measured, but his voice cut through the hammering rain, and every word echoed clearly around the dooryard. The dead still didn't move. "Be at peace," finished Sergei. "Do not trouble the living world again." And impossibly, all the dead crumpled to earth. Morozko breathed out a single, shattered breath. Vasya saw the bear's face contorted with rage. He had underestimated men's faith, and just like that, his army was gone. But Miedved himself was still unbound, still free. Now he would flee into the night, into the storm. "Morozko," she said, "quickly." But the lightning flashed again, showed them Constantine, his golden hair rain dark, standing before the hulking shadow of the bear. A gust brought the priest's carrying voice clearly to her ears. "You lied about that too, then," said Constantine, his voice small but clear. "You said there was no God, but the Holy Father prayed and..." "There isn't a God," Vasya heard the bear say. "There is only faith." "What is the difference?" "I don't know. Come, we must go." "Devil, you lied," You lied again. A break in that flawless voice. A croak like an old man coughing. God was there. There all the time. Perhaps, said the bear, and perhaps not. The truth is that no one knows, man or devil. Come with me now. They will kill you if you stay. Constantine's eyes were steady on the bear's. No, he said. They won't. He raised a blade. Go back to wherever you crept from, he said. I have one power. The devils told me this too. And once I was also a man of God. The bear's clawed hand shot out, but the priest was faster. Constantine drew the knife swiftly across his own throat. The bear caught the knife, wrenched it away. Too late. Neither one made a sound. The lightning flashed again. Vasya saw the bear's face, saw him catch Constantine as he fell, put hands, human hands now, to the blood pouring through the split skin of the priest's throat. Vasya stepped forward and whipped the rope round the bear's neck, drew it tight. He didn't dodge this time. He couldn't. Caught already by the priest's sacrifice. Instead, he just shuddered, head bowed beneath a rope's power. Vasya wrapped the other golden thing about his wrists. He didn't move. She should have felt triumph then. It was over, and they had won. But when the bear lifted his eyes to hers, there was no longer any rage in his face. Instead, his eyes looked beyond her, found his twin. Please, he said. Please? Please have mercy? Set me free once more? Somehow, Vasya didn't think so. She didn't understand. The bear's eyes went again to the priest dying in the mud. He barely seemed to notice the golden rope. Triumph in Morozko's voice, and a strange note, like unwilling understanding. You know I won't. The bear's mouth twisted. It wasn't a smile. I know you won't, he said. I had to try. The gold and blue head was dark with rain, pale with death. Constantine's hand rose, streaming blood in the darkness. The bear said, Let me touch him, damn you, to Vasya, and she stepped back bewildered, allowing the bear to kneel and catch the priest's wavering hand. He closed his own thick fingers tight around it, ignoring the bound wrists. You are a fool, man of God, he said. You never understood. Constantine said in a blood-filled whisper, I never understood what? That I do keep faith in my own fashion, said the bear, a twist of his lips. I did love your hands. The artist's hand, with its expressive fingers and cruel, tapering nails, was limp as a dead bird in the chert's grip. In Constantine's eyes, already milky, fixed on the bear, was an expression of puzzlement. You are a devil, he said again, gasping for air as the blood left his body. Aren't you vanquished? I am vanquished, man of God. Constantine stared, but Vasya could not tell what he was looking at. Perhaps he was seeing the face above him, a creature he loved and reviled as he loved and reviled himself. Perhaps he was only seeing a starlit wood and a road that had no turning. Perhaps there was peace for him there at the end. Perhaps there was only silence. The bear lowered Constantine's head to the mud, the hair golden no more, but dark with blood and water. Vasya realized she had her hand pressed to her mouth. The wicked were not supposed to mourn, or to regret, or to have seen their silent god at last in the steadfastness of another's faith. Slowly, the bear unclenched his hand from the priest's. Slowly he stood. The golden rope seemed to weigh him down, shining its sickly gleam. Still wrapped in golden cord, the bear's hands closed tightly about the Winter King's. "Brother, lead the priest gently," he said. "He is yours now, and not mine." His eyes went back to the crumpled form in the mud.
"Neither of ours in the end," said Morozko.
Basia found her hands moving to cross herself, almost without being aware of it. Konstantin's open eyes were full of rainwater, spilling over, sliding down his temples like tears.
"Your victory," the bear said to Vasya and bowed, sweeping a gesture over the field of the dead.
His voice was colder than she'd ever heard Morozko's.
"I wish you joy of it."
She said nothing.
"You have seen our end in that man's prayers," said the bear. His chin jerked toward Sergei. "Brother, you and I will stay locked in our endless war, even as we fade into ash and frost, and the world is changed. There is no hope now for the Cherti."
"We are going to share this world," Vasya said. "There will be room for all of us, men and devils and bells too." The bear only laughed softly at her.
"Shall we go, my twin?"
Morozko, without a word, swept out a hand, caught the gold binding the other's wrists. An icy wind leaped up, and the two faded into the darkness. The water was sluicing down Dmitri's hair, his bloody sword arm. He crossed the dooryard with a heavy step, pushing his rain-drenched hair out of his eyes.
"I am glad you are not dead," he said to Vasya. "Cousin," she said wryly.
"I, too." Dmitri spoke to Vasya and her brother both.
"Take the princess of Sierpukhov home," he said. "And then come back, both of you. Secretly, for God's sake. This is not over. What comes next will be worse than a few dead men."
Without another word, he left them, made his splashing way across the dvor, already calling orders.
"What is coming?" Vasya asked Sasha.
"The Tatars," said Sasha.
"Let's get Olya home. I want some dry clothes."
Part 5. Chapter 24. Turnings. Once Olga was safe in the terem of her own palace, Vasya and Sasha changed their filthy dripping clothes and hurried back to the Grand Prince. Vasya threw the fur cloak they'd given her in midnight about her shoulders. The rain had broken the heat, and it was chilly in the wet darkness. They were let quietly in through the postern and brought up at once, in silence, to Dmitri's small antechamber. The wind was roaring through windows flung wide. There were no attendants, only a table ready laid, with a jar and four cups, and bread and smoked fish and pickled mushrooms. Simple fare, for Sergei's sake. The old monk was with Dmitri, waiting for them. He drank honey wine slowly, and he looked very tired. Dmitri stood out, vivid and restless, unwearied among the vines and flowers and saints painted on his walls.
"Sit, both of you," he said, when Sasha and Vasya appeared. "I will have to consult with my boyars tomorrow, but first I wish to be decided in my own mind."
Wine was poured out, and Vasya, who had taken only a few tasteless mouthfuls when they stopped to rest by the river, now made her way steadily through bread and the good oily fish, listening all the while.
"I should have known," began Dmitri, "that yellow-haired charlatan, sweeping into Moscow to exorcise the dead things. We thought it was divine power. and all the time he was in league with the devil.
Vasya wished Dmitri wouldn't speak of it. She kept seeing Konstantin's face as it had looked in the rain.
We are well rid of him, Dmitri continued.
Sergei said, you have not summoned us all, weary as we are, to gloat.
No, said Dmitri, his triumphant mood fading.
I have been getting reports. The Tatars are on the lower Volga, marching north. Mamai is still coming. No word of Vladimir Andreevich. The silver
was lost, said Vasya, remembering. Every head in the room swiveled.
Lost in a flood, she continued.
She set aside her cup and straightened her back.
If the silver was your ransom for Muscovy, Dmitri Ivanovich, then Muscovy has not been ransomed.
They were still staring. Vasya looked steadily back.
I swear it is true. Do you wish to know how I know?
I do not, said Dmitri, crossing himself. I'd rather know more. Is Vladimir dead?
Alive.
Captured?
That I do not know, said Vasya. She paused. But I could find out.
Dmitri only frowned at that thoughtfully and paced the room, grim, restless, leonine.
If my spies confirm what you say about the silver, then I will send word to the princes of Rus. We have no choice. We have to muster at Kolomna before the dark of the moon, then march south to fight. Or are we to allow all Rus to be overrun?
Dmitri spoke to them all, but his eyes were on Sasha, who had once pleaded with him not to engage the Tatar in the field. Now Sasha only said, with a grimness to match Dmitri's, which of the princes will come to the muster?
Rostov, Starodub, said Dmitri,
ticking off the principalities on his fingers. He was still pacing.
The ones in my vassalage. Nizhny Novgorod, for its prince is my father-in-law. Tver, to honor the treaty. But would I had the prince of Sierpukhov. He is clever in council and loyal, and I will need his men.
He halted in his pacing, his eyes on Vasya.
What of Oleg of Ryazan? Sasha asked. Oleg won't come, said Dmitri. Ryazan is too close to Sarai, and Oleg is cautious by nature. He won't risk it, regardless of what his boyars want. He'll march with Mamai, if anything, but we'll fight anyway. Without Ryazan, and without Sierpukhov, if we must. Do we have a choice? We tried ransoming Muscovy, but we could not. Shall we submit, or shall we fight?
This time, the question was addressed to all three of them. No one said anything.
I will send to the princess tomorrow, said Dmitri. Father,
here he turned to Sergei, will you come with us and bless the army?
I will, my son, said Sergei.
He sounded weary.
But you know, even a victory will cost you. I'd avoid war if I could, said the Grand Prince, but I can't, and so his face shone. We will fight at last, after a summer of fear and cringing. God willing, it will be our time to throw off the yoke.
And God help them all, Vasya thought.
When Dmitri spoke so, they believed him. She knew without asking that the princes would come to his mustering. God help us all.
The Grand Prince turned abruptly to Vasya. I have your brother's sword, he said. And I have the Holy Father's blessing. But what will I have from you, Vasilisa Petrovna? I was sorry to think you dead, but then I heard you set fire to my city.
She got to her feet to face him. I am guilty before you, Gosudar, said Vasya. Yet twice I helped defeat this city's enemies. The fire was my fault, but the snowstorm that followed, I summoned that too. As for punishment, I was punished.
She turned her head so the mark on her cheek showed stark in the firelight. Subtly, her hand closed on the carved nightingale in her sleeve, but that was not a sorrow she meant to parade before these men.
What do you want of me?
Twice you were nearly burned alive, said Dimitri. Yet you came back to save this city from evil. Perhaps you should be rewarded. What do you want, Vasilisa Petrovna?
She knew her answer and didn't mince words.
There is a way to know if Vladimir Andreevich is alive or dead. If he is alive, then I am going to find him. You muster in 2 weeks?
Yes, said Dmitri wearily. But, she cut him off.
I will be there, she said. And if Vladimir Andreevich is alive, he will be there too, with his men.
Impossible, said Dmitri.
Vasya said, if I succeed, then I will consider my debt paid to you and to the city. And now, I would ask you for your trust, not for a boy named Vasily Petrovich, who never existed, but for myself.
Why should I trust you, Vasilisa Petrovna? Asked Dmitri, but his gaze was intent. You are a witch.
She defended the church from evil, said Sergei, and made the sign of the cross. Strange are the works of God.
Vasya crossed herself in turn.
Witch I may be, Dmitri Ivanovich, but the powers of Rus must be allies now. Prince and church must join with the unseen world. Otherwise, there is no hope of victory. First, I needed men to help me defeat a devil, she thought. Now I will need devils to help me defeat men. But who could do it other than she?
You can be a bridge between men and charity, Morozko had said.
She thought she understood that now. For a moment, there was no sound but the triumphant wind pouring in through the windows. Then Dmitri simply said, I will trust you. He laid a light hand on her head, a prince's blessing on a warrior. She went very still under the touch.
What do you need?
Vasya thought. She was still glowing with the words, I will trust you.
Clothes such as a tradesman's son might wear, she said.
Cousin, Sasha broke in, if she goes, then I must go with her. She's made enough journeys without her kin.
Dmitri looked surprised.
I need you here. You speak Tatar. You know the country between here and Sarai.
Sasha said nothing. Understanding came suddenly into Dmitri's face. Perhaps he had remembered the night of the fire. Sasha's sister forced out into the dark alone.
I will not stop you, Sasha, he said reluctantly. But you must be at the mustering, whether she succeeds or no.
Sasha, Vasya began, just as he went to her and said low, I wept for you. Even when Varvara told me you were alive, I wept. I despised myself, that I had let my sister face such horror alone. And I despised myself more when you appeared again at my campfire, so changed. I am not letting you go alone.
Vasya put a hand on her brother's arm. Then, if you come with me tonight,
her grip tightened, their eyes met.
I warn you, the road leads through darkness.
Sasha said,
then we will go through darkness, sister.
When they got back to Olga's palace, Varvara was waiting for them at the bathhouse. Sasha bathed hastily and sought his bed. Midnight would come soon, the hour of their departure. But Vasya lingered.
I never said thank you, she told Varvara, for that night on the river. You saved my life.
I would not have, said Varvara. I didn't know what I could do for you but mourn. But Polunochnitsa spoke to me. I had not heard her voice for so long. She told me what was wanted, and so I went down to the burning.
Varvara, said Vasya, in the country of midnight, I met your mother.
Varvara's lips tightened.
I suppose she thought you were Tamara over again, only a daughter she could control, one who was not in love with a sorcerer.
Vasya had no answer to that. Instead, she said, why did you come to Moscow at all? Why be a servant? Old anger showed in Varvara's face.
I have not the gift of seeing, she said. I cannot see Cherti.
I can hear the stronger ones and speak a little of the speech of horses, that is all. There was no wonder for me in my mother's kingdom, only cold and danger and isolation, and later my mother's wrath. She had dealt too harshly with Tamara. So I left her, went in search of my sister. In time I came to Moscow, the city of men. I found Tamara there, but already beyond my aid, dim and wandering, bowed down by grief beyond her strength. She had borne a child that I protected as I could. Vasya nodded. But when the child went north to marry, I did not follow. She had her nurse, and her husband was a good man. I didn't want to live in another land with only forest and no people. I liked the sound of the bells, the color and hurry of Moscow. So I stayed and waited. In time, another girl of my blood came, and I grew whole again, caring for your sister and her children. Why be a servant, though? Do you ask? Varvara demanded. Servants have more freedom than noble women. I could walk about as I wished, go into the sun with my head uncovered. I was happy. Witches die alone. My mother and my sister showed me that. Has your gift brought you any happiness, Fire Maiden? It has, said Vasya, without elaborating. But grief as well. A little anger threaded her voice. Since you knew them both, Tamara and Kasyan, why did you do nothing for her after she died? Why did you not warn us when Kasyan came to Moscow? Varvara did not move, but suddenly her face showed sharp lines and hollows, the echoes of old grief. I knew my sister haunted the palace. I could not get her to go, and I did not know why she lingered. Kasyan, I did not know when he came. He wore a different face in Moscow than the one he wore when he seduced Tamara by the lake at midsummer. She must have seen the doubt in Vasya's eyes, for she burst out. I am not like you, with your immortal eyes, your mad courage. I am only a woman, unworthy of my bloodlines, who has done what I could to care for my own. Vasya said nothing to that, but put out a hand and took Varvara's in hers, and neither of them spoke a moment. Then Vasya said with effort, Will you tell my sister? Varvara had her mouth open on what was obviously a sharp reply, and then she hesitated. I never dared before, said Varvara grudgingly. There was a thread of doubt now in her voice. Why would she believe me? I do not appear old enough to be anyone's great aunt. I think Olga has seen enough wonders lately to believe you, said Vasya. I think you should tell her. It would give her joy. Although I see your point. Vasya looked at Varvara with new eyes. Her body was strong, her hair yellow, barely touched with white. How old are you? Varvara shrugged. I don't know. Older than I look. Our mother never told me who sired us, but I always assumed my long life was some gift of his, whoever he was. I am happy here, truly, Vasilisa Petrovna. I never wanted power, only folk to care for. Save Moscow for them, and take my wild Maria somewhere she can breathe, and I will be content. Vasya smiled. I will do that. Aunt. Varvara left, and Vasya finished her bath and dressed. Clean, she stepped out into the covered walkway that connected the bathhouse to the terem. The rain was still falling, but more gently. The lightning was sparser now as the storm moved on. It took Vasya a moment to pick out the shadow. She stilled, the bathhouse door rough at her back. Thin-voiced, she spoke. Is it done? It is done, Morozko returned. He is bound by my power, by his own votary sacrifice, and by Kashche's golden bridle. All three together, he will never win free again. The rain fell cold now, beating down summer's dust. Vasya let go the door. The rain whispered on the roof. She crossed the walkway until she could see his face. Until she could ask a question that troubled her. What did the bear mean, she asked, when he said, Please.
Orozco frowned, but rather than answer in words, he lifted his cupped hand. Water collected in his palm.
I wondered if you would ask, he said.
Give me your hand.
Vasya did.
He let the water run lightly over the cuts on her arm and fingers. They healed with that startling spear of agony. There and gone. She jerked her hand back.
Water of death, said Morozko, letting the remaining droplets scatter. That is my power. I can restore flesh, living or dead.
She'd known he could heal since the first night she met him, and he healed her frostbite, but she hadn't connected it to the fairy tale, hadn't considered.
You said you could only heal wounds that you'd inflicted.
I did. Another lie?
His mouth set hard.
A part of the truth. The bear wanted you to save Constantine's life? Not save it, he said. I can mend flesh, but he was already too far gone. Medved wanted me to mend the priest's flesh, so he could bring him back. Together, my brother and I can restore the dead, for Medved's gift is the water of life. That is why he said, please.
Frowning, Vasya considered her healed fingers, the scars on palm and wrist.
But, Morozko added, we never act together. Why would we? He is monstrous, he and his power both.
The bear mourned, said Vasya. He mourned when Father Constantine,
Morozko made a sound of impatience.
The wicked can still mourn, Vasya.
She didn't reply. She stood still while the rain fell all around them, overwhelmed again by all the things she didn't know. The Winter King was part of the lingering storm, his humanity only a shadow of his true self, his power rising as summer waned. His eyes glittered in the darkness, yet he had cared for her, schemed for her. Why should she give the bear or Constantine a passing thought? They were murderers both, and they were both gone. Shaking off her unease, she said,
"Will you come meet my sister? I promised."
Morozko looked surprised.
Come to her as your suitor and ask her permission, he asked. Will it change anything? It might make it worse.
Still, said Vasya, otherwise
I am not a man, Vasya, he said. No sacrament will bind me. I cannot marry you under the laws of your god or your people. If you are looking for honor in your sister's eyes, you will not find it.
She had known that was true, but I'd like you to meet her anyway, said Vasya. At least, perhaps she will not fear for me.
There was a silence, and then she realized that he was shaking with silent laughter. She crossed her arms, offended. He looked at her, crystalline-eyed.
I am not likely to reassure anyone's sister, he said, when he stopped laughing. But I will, if you like.
Olga was in Maria's chamber, watching over the child's sleep. The marks of long strain shadowed the girl's pale, pinched face. She had taken on too great a labor too young, and Olga looked scarcely less weary. Vasya halted in the doorway, suddenly unsure of her welcome. The bed was covered in feather-stuffed ticking, with furs and woven wool. For a moment, Vasya wanted to be a child again, to fall into bed beside Maria and go to sleep while her sister stroked her hair. But Olga turned at Vasya's soft-footed approach, and the wish vanished. One could not go backward. Vasya crossed the room, touched Maria's cheek.
She will be all right, Vasya asked.
She is only tired, I think, said Olga.
She was very brave, said Vasya.
Olga smoothed her daughter's hair and said nothing.
Olya,
Vasya said awkwardly. All the composure she'd found in Dmitri's hall seemed to have deserted her.
I told you that you would meet him, if you wish.
Olga frowned.
Him?
Vasya.
You asked. He is here. Will you see him?
Morozko did not wait for an answer, nor did he walk through the door like a person. He simply stepped out of the shadows. The domovoy had been sitting beside the stove. Now he shot to his feet, bristling. Maria stirred in her sleep.
I mean them no harm, little one, said Morozko, speaking first to the domovoy.
Olga had lurched to her feet, too. She was standing in front of Maria's bed, as though to defend her child from evil. Vasya, stiff with apprehension, suddenly saw the frost demon as her sister did, a cold-eyed shadow. She began to doubt her own course. Morozko turned away from the domovoy, bowed to Olga.
I know you, Olga whispered. Why have you come here?
Not for a life, Morozko said. His voice was even, but Vasya felt him wary.
Olga said to Vasya, I remember him. I remember. He took my daughter away.
No, he, began Vasya, clumsily, and Morozko shot her a hard look. She subsided. His face was unchanged, but his whole body was taut with strain. Vasya understood why. He'd wanted to go near enough to humanity to be remembered, so he could go on existing. But Vasya had pulled him nearer and nearer still, like a moth to a candle flame. Now he must look at Olga, understand the torment in her eyes, and carry it with him down the long roads of his life. He didn't want to, but he didn't move.
It is little comfort, Morozko said carefully, but your elder daughter has a long life before her, and the younger, I will remember her.
You are a devil, said Olga. My little girl didn't even have a name.
I will remember her regardless, said the Winter King.
Olga stared at him a moment and then suddenly broke. Her whole body bowed with grief. She put her face in her hands. Vasya, feeling helpless, went to her sister, wrapped tentative arms about her.
Olya, she said. Olya, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Olga made no answer, and Morozko stood where he was. He did not speak again. There was a long silence. Olga took a deep breath. Her eyes were wet.
I never wept, she said. Not since the night I lost her.
Vasya held her sister tightly. Olga gently put Vasya's arms aside.
Why my sister? She asked Morozko. Why, of all the women in the world?
For her blood, said Morozko, but later, for her courage.
Have you anything to offer her? Olga asked him, and with an edge, besides whispers in the dark.
Vasya bit back her sound of protest. If the question took Morozko aback, it didn't show.
All the lands of winter, he said. The black trees and the silver frost, gold and riches made by men. She may fill her hands with wealth if she desires it. Will you deny her the spring and the summer?
I will deny her nothing, but there are places she can go where I cannot easily follow.
He is not a man, Olga said to Vasya, not taking her eyes off the Winter King. He will not be a husband to you.
Vasya bowed her head. I have never wanted a husband. He came with me out of winter for Moscow's sake. It is enough.
And you think he won't hurt you in the end? Remember the dead girl in the fairy tale.
I am not she, said Vasya.
What if this liaison means your damnation?
I am damned already, Vasya said, by every law of God and man. But I do not wish to be alone.
Olga sighed and said sadly,
As you say, sister.
Abruptly she said,
Very well, my blessing on you both. Now send him away.
Vasya followed Morozko out. He even went through the door this time, in ordinary fashion. But when he was outside, he halted, head bowed, like a man after hard labor. He managed to say to her through gritted teeth, "The bathhouse." She took his hand and pulled him there with her, shut the door on darkness, forgot a candle wasn't burning. Four flared up at once. He sank to one of the benches of the outer room and drew a shuddering breath. A bathhouse was a place of birth and of death, of transformation and of magic, and perhaps of memory. He could breathe easier there, but... "Are you all right?" she asked. He didn't answer. "I cannot stay," he said instead. His eyes were pale as water, his hands locked together, the bones of them stark in the candlelight. "I cannot. It is not my time yet here. I must go back to my own lands. He broke off, then said, "I am Winter, and have been too long separate from myself." "Is that the only reason?" she asked. He wasn't looking at her now. Forcibly, he relaxed his clenched hands, laid them on his knees. Almost inaudibly, he said, "I cannot learn any more names. It draws me too near." "Too near what? Mortality? Can you become mortal?" she asked. He was taken aback. "How? I am not made of flesh, but it tears at me." "Then it will always tear at you, I think," said Vasya, "so long as we... unless you forget me." He rose to his feet. "I have made that choice already," he said, "but I must return to my own lands. You are not the only one who can be driven mad with impossibilities. I cannot endure this one anymore. I do not belong in the summertime world. Vasya, you have done all you must. Come with me." At his words, a bolt of longing tore through her for blue skies and deep snow, for wild places and for silence, for his firelit house in the fir grove, for his hands in the darkness. She could go with him and leave all the doings of men behind her, leave the city that had cost Solovey his life. But even as she thought it, she said, "I can't. It isn't over." "Your part in this is over. If Dmitri fights the Tatars, then that is a war of men and not of charity. A war the bear brought about." "A war that might have happened anyway," retorted Morozko. "A war that's been threatening for years." She put a hand to her cheek, where lay the scar from a stone flung as she was led to her death. "I know," she said, "but I am Russian, and they are my people." "They put you in the fire," said Morozko. "You owe them nothing. Come with me." "But who will I be if I go with you?" she demanded. "Just a snow maiden, the Winter King's bride, forgotten by the whole world, just like you." She saw him flinch at the words. Biting her lips, she asked in a calmer voice, "Who am I if I cannot help my people?" "Your people are more than a single ill-conceived battle. You freed your brother because you thought I could keep the charity from fading out of the world. Perhaps I can, but the other Rus, the Rus of men and women, paid the price, and I am going to make it right again. The bear's mischief did not end with Moscow. My task is not over. And if it gets you killed, do you think I want to bear you away into the dark and then never see you again?" "I know you don't," she dragged in a deep breath, "but I still have to try." For her sake, Morozko had made common cause with her brother, asked her sister's forgiveness, gone into Moscow in summer, bound the bear. But she had reached the limits of both his strength and his will. He would not fight Dmitri's war. She would, though, because she wanted to be more than a snow maiden. She wanted Dmitri's faith and his hand on her head. She wanted a victory brought about by her courage. But she also wanted the Winter King. in the smoke and dust and stink of Moscow. He was a breath of pine and cold water and stillness. She could not think for wanting him. He saw her waver. Their eyes met in the darkness, and he closed the distance between them. He wasn't gentle. He was angry, and so was she, baffled and wanting, and their hands were rough on each other's skin. When she kissed him, he felt like flesh under her hands, drawn sharply into reality by the place and the hour, and by her own passion. The silence stretched out, as their hands said the things they could not, and Vasya almost told him yes then. She almost let him carry her to his white horse, bear her away into the night. She didn't want to think anymore. But she must think. Tamara had let her own demon lull her with dreams of love until she'd lost everything that mattered. She wasn't Tamara. Vasya yanked away, gasping for breath, and he let her go. "Go back to winter, then," she heard herself saying, her voice hoarse. "I am taking the road through midnight to find my brother-in-law, if he is alive. I am going to help Dmitri Ivanovich win his war." Morozko stood still. Slowly the anger and confusion and desire faded from his expression. "Vladimir Andreevich is alive," he said only. "But I do not know where he is. Vasya, I cannot walk this road beside you." "I will find him," said Vasya. "You will find him," Morozko said, with weary certainty. He bowed, remote, any feeling locked deep in his eyes. "Look for me at the first frost." He slipped out of the bathhouse like a wraith. She hurried to follow, angry still, but not wanting him to go like that, with a wound unhealed between them. She'd pitched him against his own nature, a foe that was too great. He went out into the dooryard and raised his face to the night. For an instant, the wind was the true deep wind of winter that freezes the breath in your nostrils. Suddenly, he turned back to her, and the feeling was there again in his face, as though he could not help it. "Be well, and do not forget Snegurochka," he said. "I will not, Morozko." He was only half there. The wind seemed to blow through him. "As I could, I loved you too," she whispered. Their eyes met. Then he was gone, gone on the rising wind, blown through the wild air. Chapter 25. The Road Through Darkness. Sasha and Vasya left just before midnight. "I am sorry," Sasha said to Olga before they left, "for what I said at our last parting." Olga almost smiled, but the corners of her mouth turned down. "I was angry too. You'd think I'd be used to farewells, brother." "If it goes ill for us in the south," said Sasha, "you mustn't stay in Moscow. Take the children to Lesnaya Zemlya." "I know," said the princess of Serpukhov, and brother and sister exchanged grim glances. Olga had lived through three sieges. Sasha had been fighting Dmitri's battles since the two were scarcely out of boyhood. Watching them, Vasya was reminded uncomfortably that though she had seen much, she had never seen war. "Go with God, both of you," said Olga. Vasya and Sasha slipped out of Moscow. Below the gate, the posad slept. The swift, cold wind had driven out the reek of sickness. At least the dead would lie quiet. Vasya led her brother into the woods, to the same place where Varvara had first sent her through midnight. How long ago had it been? 2 seasons had passed in Rus since that night, but Vasya had lost count of the days she'd lived herself. Somewhere in Moscow, a bell rang. The city walls loomed white beyond the trees. Vasya took her brother's hand. It was midnight. The darkness took on a wilder texture, a new menace and a deeper beauty. She stepped forward, pulling her brother with her.
"Think of our cousin," she said. One step, two, and then Sasha let out a soft, shocked breath.
Moscow was gone.
They stood in a sparse elm copse, dry and warm. There was dust instead of mud between Vasya's bare toes, and the big late summer stars hung low overhead. A different midnight.
"Mother of God," Sasha whispered. "These are the woods near Sierpukhov."
"I told you," said Vasya. "It is a swift road, but..."
She broke off. The black stallion Voron emerged from between two trees. His rider's morning star eyes glowed in the darkness. Sasha's hand went to the hilt of his sword. Perhaps the country of midnight had wakened something in his blood, for he could see horse and rider.
"That is Lady Midnight," said Vasya, not taking her eyes off the Cherth. "This is her realm."
She inclined her head.
Sasha crossed himself. Polonochnitsa smiled at him, mocking, and slid down from her horse's back.
"God be with you," Sasha said cautiously.
"I certainly hope not," returned Polunochnitsa.
Voron tossed his black head, his ears set unhappily. Turning to Vasya, Midnight said,
"In my realm again? And proud of your victory?"
"We did win," Vasya said wary.
"No," said Midnight, "you didn't. What do you think the real battle is, you arrogant fool? You never understood, did you?"
Vasya said nothing.
Between her teeth, Midnight said, "We hoped, I hoped, that you were different, that you would break their endless round of revenge and imprisonment, but you encouraged their war, those idiot twins."
"What are you talking about?" Vasya demanded. "We saved Moscow from the dead. I do not know why you are angry. He is wicked, the bear. Wicked. Now he is bound. Rus is safe."
"Is it?" Midnight asked. "You still don't understand."
Fury and disgust and disappointment snapped in her eyes.
"You cannot rule the Cherti or keep the house by the lake or save us from fading out of life. You failed. The way to the lake is shut to you. I am shutting it and risking the old woman's wrath. She will have no heir. Farewell, Vasilisa Petrovna."
Then she was gone, fast as she'd appeared, a whirl of pale hair, vaulting to Voron's back. The last Vasya heard of her was the sound of fading hoofbeats. Shaken, Vasya stared at the place where she'd been. Sasha looked merely puzzled.
"What did that mean?"
"I do not understand why she is angry," said Vasya, but she was uneasy.
"We have to go on. Follow me close. We must not be separated." They walked cautiously, for Vasya feared Midnight's anger in this place of her power. Sasha followed her, starting at shadows, bewildered by the changing nights, but still he followed her. He trusted her. Vasya blamed herself later.
Chapter 26. The Golden Horde. They had no warning. They saw no gleam from far off, heard no noise. They merely stepped suddenly from darkness into firelight filled with laughter. For an instant, they both froze. The revelers froze too. Vasya had a brief impression of weapons, curved swords and short bows unstrung. She could smell horses, see the shine of their eyes, watching from beyond the firelight. All around them, men sprang to their feet. They weren't speaking Russian. It sounded like the words she'd heard once on a dark winter night when she'd rescued girls from...
"Get back," Vasya said to Sasha. Out of the corner of her eye, she glimpsed pale hair, Midnight's set, triumphant face. She thought she heard a whisper.
"Learn or die, Vasilisa Petrovna."
Swords in a dozen men's hands. Her brother's sword reflected the firelight when he drew it.
"Tatars!" Sasha snapped.
Vasya, go!
No, she was still trying to pull him back. No, we must only walk back into midnight.
But the men were closing in around them. She could not see the midnight road.
Vasya, said Sasha in a voice more terrible for its calm. I am a monk. They will not kill me, but you. Run. Run!
He drove himself at the men, knocking them aside. She backed away from the melee, willed the campfire into a sudden storm of light. The renewed fire drove the Tatars back just as their brother's sword met another, sparking. There was the midnight road, just beyond the light. The fire flared again, frightening the men, and she called, Sasha, this way! Or started to say, for the hilt of a sword caught her on the temple, and the world went dark. Sasha, seeing his sister fall, dropped his sword and said in Tatar to the man who had struck her down, I am a man of God, and that is my servant. Do not hurt him.
Indeed, you are a man of God, returned the Tatar.
He spoke Russian, lightly accented.
You are Alexander Peresviet, but this is not your servant.
The voice was vaguely familiar, but Sasha could not see the Tatar's face. The man stood over Vasya, on the other side of the fire, and pulled the girl upright. Her eyelids fluttered. A gash across her forehead poured a maze of blood across her face.
This is your witch of a sister, said the Tatar.
He sounded both pleased and mystified.
How came you both here, spying for Dmitri? Why would he spend his cousins so?
Shocked silent, Sasha said nothing. He'd recognized the other man.
Come on, added the Tatar in his own tongue.
He heaved Vasya over his shoulder.
Tie the monk's hands and follow me. The general will want to know of this.
Someone was carrying her. Every footfall jarred her head. She vomited. Pain like shards of ice shot through her skull. The man carrying her exclaimed in disgust.
Do that again, said a half-familiar voice, and I'll beat you myself when the general is done.
She tried to look about her, seeking for the midnight road, but she couldn't see it. She must have lost it when she fell unconscious. Now the night was drawing on, and she and Sasha were trapped until the next day's midnight. Her senses swam. She couldn't make herself and her brother disappear under the eyes of the entire camp. Maybe she could, but even as she tried to plan, her thoughts fractured. Something loomed before her, dimly seen, just as she drifted back to awareness. It was a round building made of felt. A flap was thrust aside, and she was borne through the gap. Terror locked her throat and stomach. Where was her brother? Men inside. She couldn't tell how many. Two stood in the center, finely dressed, illuminated by a small stove and a hanging lamp. The person carrying her let her fall. Floundering, she managed to drag herself to her knees. She had an impression of wealth. The lamp was of worked silver. There was a smell of fat meat and carpet under her knees. All around was the disorienting buzz of a tongue she didn't understand. Sasha was thrown down beside her. One of the finely dressed men was a Tatar. The other was a Russian. It was he who spoke first.
What is this? He asked. This, echoed that almost familiar voice from behind her.
Vasya tried to twist around and had to freeze, gasping, at the pain in her head. But then the man stepped forward and she could see his face. She knew him. He had nearly killed her once in a forest outside Moscow. With the help of a wicked sorcerer, he had nearly deposed Dmitri Ivanovich.
It seems, said Chelubey in Russian, smiling at her, that Dmitri Ivanovich has devised a novel means to rid himself of his cousins.
The tall one, the one they were calling Temnik, general, had to be Mamai, though Sasha knew him by reputation only.
He didn't recognize the Russian.
Cousins? Asked the Temnik in his own tongue.
Mamai was a man in his middle years, weary, dignified, gray. He'd been loyal